Good Samaritan laws, yeah.
I'd like to call to order the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development, and I would open the public hearing on House, on Senate Bill 270. This is the University Governance Bill. We were anticipating the technical amendments that we're working on with a work group and some of the attorneys for the universities alongside Representatives Johnson and Dembro. And I was hoping that we'd have that today, and we don't. The drafters are very good, but they cannot perform miracles, is what I've concluded there. So, but we do have esteemed guest from OHSU, Dr. Joe Robertson is here, if you want to come up. And he's here today and was kindly agreed to come down and talk to us about what being granted some autonomy from the state system in about 18 years ago did for OHSU and for this state. Some of you might be surprised to know how large and important OHSU has become in our state, in our region. It is, I believe, the largest employer now in Portland. It is vital to our region, not just as a research facility, but as an economic power. And a lot of folks would credit that to the freedom and autonomy that it was granted back in 1995. So since that is part of our mission on what we're looking at for these other universities, we thought it would be a good idea for him to come in and crow about the success. Welcome.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, I am delighted to be here this afternoon. I'm Joe Robertson, president of OHSU, and this gives me the opportunity to speak about what is certainly my favorite professional topic, and that is OHSU. And I've been there since 1979, and I've had the opportunity to watch the growth and development of this enterprise. I have prepared some slides and some opening remarks in the way of background. You have that material. I will try and go over it fairly quickly. I will not read every word because I do want to leave adequate time for questions so that this can certainly be a dialogue. As was referenced earlier, Senate Bill 2 created OHSU in 1995, and there are 4 points here that probably are, you know, we all like to make the critical points, and I think you will see this on this slide, and you will see it again on the concluding slide. This empowered our board, gave us access to capital, provided quite a specific clarity of mission, and gave us the nimbleness that we especially needed at the market, with the changes in the medical marketplace at that time. The other very important point that I would like to stress is that in the wisdom of this legislation was that it created a board that was specific to OHSU. There was a considerable amount of study done, and the legislation fit OHSU almost perfectly. And, you know, there's always room for improvement, but almost perfectly. This legislation really is the envy of other public academic health centers around the country. But I think it was because it was custom made. OHSU today, most of you have heard that we take great pride in being a statewide institution. We talk about our campus being all 96,000 square miles, four schools, a large health system, numerous institutes. Healing, teaching, discovery does, and outreach includes the description of the multitude of our missions. The funding of OHSU, we are very dependent upon the green. We thought it was appropriate to make green the color where most of the money comes from. Our enterprise is very dependent upon the clinical activity that occurs at OHSU. And wasn't quite keeping up there. I think this is a slide that makes that even more clear. You will see the amount of money that is moved from the clinical enterprise to support the academic enterprise, specifically teaching and research, that it is not only large in its magnitude, but it has continued to grow, and that is essential for the overall health of our organization. A few comments about becoming a public corporation. I would like to stress the word public. I think OHSU is as public as it ever has been, okay? It is, as we say, it's in the DNA of who we are and what we do. Part of that relates back to the clarity of purpose that was embodied in the legislation. Every member of our faculty knows that. When we redid our strategic plan, the key elements of that plan relate to that public mission, and it is about improving Oregon and about improving the health and well-being of Oregonians. Certainly, OHSU has grown over the years. But until 1995, until 1974, it was just a small cluster of different organizations on the Hill. We became one organization, but then again in the 1990s, we were ripe for change. As I mentioned before, we were having a difficult time responding to managed care. There were great problems in moving capital projects forward. I was there at this time. I remember it taking us 4 years to make a specific addition that we desperately needed to labor and delivery. And we, so that this legislation was then enacted in 1995. We've mentioned these before. I think I'll go right to the description of the board. We have a 10-member board. 9 members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the state senate, and then those 9 members elect the president, who is a voting ex officio member. The greatest strength of our board, it is that there are no factions on the board. Every member of the board has one constituency, and that constituency all the citizens of this great state. We have had a variety of types of individuals serve on the board. I think that has been a critical element of this of success. As time change, you can change the composition of the board to bring the skills to the board that are needed at that time. We still very much act in concert with OUS, and for instance, our VP of research has been head of the OUS Research Council. Our provost goes to the Provost Council. We coordinate in many ways with OUS, so even though we are separate, we are very much, I think, aligned. This has enabled us to, I think, be very innovative in the healthcare arena, and we have on this page many of the developments that have occurred that support that. I would also like to emphasize, though, I think OHSU is much more integrated now than it was even at 1995. That besides allowing the entity to enlarge, we are much more of a cohesive entity now than we were 18 years ago. Here's, I think most of you are aware of most of these buildings. Of course, the most recent addition to this is the one, the last one in that first list, the Collaborative Life Sciences building. That's a tremendous testimonial to the power of partnership and the power of philanthropy. That is a building that will have 3 institutions of this state occupying large portions of the building. And just as an example, I am certain that we will have over $80 million of philanthropy in that building that was brought to OHSU that will be able to be shared in a public way. We have had a consistent increase in our bond rating in the last 3 to 4 years. We've moved from a BBB+ to an A+ rating, demonstrating financial stability. Here's the growth, not only in our operating budget, but I think it's important to see how the employees have expanded and as how have our student learners. Our structure allows us to be a more nimble partner. We have heard this time and time again that organizations and even communities feel that they know how to interact with us better. Since we are a public corporation, there are several very unique and critically important partnerships. I would be happy to discuss any of these. It's also, we think, been a boon with our philanthropic efforts, again, related to the nimbleness and clarity of purpose. Lessons learned. We did not have a lot of administrative services that were set up. So we were, you know, starting from a dead stop. Things were a little awkward at the beginning as we were setting up some of those administrative services. A few more questions that are frequently asked. The property that was that was underneath the buildings of OHSU at that time remains owned by the state. There's a 99-year lease, but we were empowered to acquire property and have done so. We were also given the opportunity in the enabling legislations to create a pension plan in addition to PERS, which we have done and which many of our members participate in. Although we are specifically exempt from public contracting laws, I think we do definitely follow the spirit of those laws, and our policies reflect that. Student tuition and debt are a growing problem. We're working very hard to overcome that. I think that one of the things I would like to do today is dispel any myth that it is the public creation that has created, I mean, the public corporation that has created high tuition. I do not see that as the cause. OHSU has worked very hard. This is a nationwide problem. It is multifactorial. As you can see here, OHSU contributes more to the financial support of our students today than we ever have. And I know this chart all too well. I know it painstakingly well. In 2001, I was just becoming interim dean when we had to raise tuition as corresponding to one of our initial state cuts in state funding. I stepped out of that position, but in 2003, the dean had left. I was again interim dean, dealt with it the next time, and then by the third, I was the permanent dean. So I was one of the individuals responsible for making that policy decision. I had advocated for education and continue my entire career, but when we looked at the overall situation, we opted to maintain quality and quantity. So if you see, despite diminishing state support, we consciously decided to increase the number of student learners at OHSU, even though there were many that encouraged us to reduce the number of students. We did not think that was in the state's long-term best interest. We stand by that decision. We also maintain the programs that we think are vital for a varied workforce, including our rural rotations and at the other end of the spectrum, research opportunities that allow people to go into academic medicine. So in conclusion, I think this has been really has been transformative legislation. I hope that you are proud of our accomplishments, and we are. I would finish reminding you again of the four main points, but I would just like to add a few things that we've enjoyed the ability to be annual budgeteers under this new, and I think that's important to do in this era, especially in the era of healthcare reform, as we move from, you know, biennial budgeting to annual budgeting. The legislation specifically kept us as a governmental entity, which is very important for our interaction with federal agencies and federal funding. And finally, this format has been quite a tool to help us recruit faculty and other of our officials. For instance, I'm thinking of our CFO that's sitting two rows behind me. He was very enamored, in fact, by this, by our administrative structure, and it was one of the reasons he was happy to move here from Chicago. So thank you for this opportunity to make my comments to you, and I look forward to some questions.
Thank you, President Robinson. You know that the legislation we have before us doesn't go as far as where OHSU went in terms of the 1995 legislation, but it does give the three universities who have asked to be considered for their own board the ability to issue revenue bonds. How important was that component in the development, the transformational success of you?
It's been very important to us. This And I go back, I do remember just painstakingly well when we needed very quickly to enlarge the labor and delivery suite at OHSU, and we kept having to come to the legislature at that time. And even though we had the funding, we're not able to initiate that capital project. So there may be other ways to obtain that nimbleness, but that ability to go to the bond market and engage in those capital projects that we feel are essential for our success have been a vital element of our success.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Robertson, thank you for being here. I always consider OHSU to be one of the crown jewels of Oregon, and I think what you've been able to accomplish as a team up there on the Hill in a little over 15 years is just amazing. It really was amazing. But as we've had this discussion in this committee over the other universities, one of the issues that comes up frequently is, yeah, but you have to be careful because what OHSU encountered with some financial issues in the start, you know, some of the problems there, maybe oversubscribing on revenue bonds, and certainly the conflicts you entered during that period, as you were talking about, with, you know, how much of it was the changing healthcare market versus other things that were happening. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Senator Beyer, thank you. I think, as we look back at the history, I think it is one of evolution and learning. We were very ambitious at the beginning, and I think there were those that say we might have overreached. As we look in the retrospectoscope, it worked out rather well. There are some rocky times when you start off, but I think it was part of that energy and ambition that created the drive to put us in the position we are today.
Do you think there's any, if I may, do you think there's any significant difference between a healthcare university and others in terms of use of revenue bonds?
The sources of revenue are different, and I think what was essential for us was the ability to do with the revenue bonds what we needed to do to expand our healthcare delivery system, and that is the primary source of revenue that has grown over the years to support our academic enterprise. Okay, I would hearken back to say that this legislation worked so well for OHSU because it was crafted specifically for OHSU, and one of the aspects of that legislation were the revenue bonds that allowed us to expand the clinical enterprise.
So, last question, Mr. Chair. Joe, the other side that we've had a lot of discussion about, both since we started and particularly in the interim, was what a board should look like. University board. Some people have suggested that we ought to have dedicated slots, specifically dedicated staffing and student participation. Others have frankly suggested that we ought to follow the OHSU model, which is not particularly specific as to who ought to be there. Have you thought about the effectiveness of your board and how it might be different or how this might be different?
Senator Beyer, I do have very specific thoughts about this, and I don't know what political fray I may be walking into, but I feel very strongly that there should not be designated positions. I think the designation of a student makes sense because the student is the least empowered member of our society, but other than that, we do not have factions on our board, and part of the orientation that I take every board member to, no matter what walk of life they come from, is that we are all here to represent all of the citizens of this state. We are not here to represent any special group. There are no special interests on the OHSU board. Every member is charged with looking out for the interest of all Oregonians, and that is part of our core, and I think that is a very important principle. Over time, the governor and the Senate have the ability to mold the composition of that board. So if there is something that is insufficiently represented, that can be addressed through the mechanism that exists. And I think it is very difficult to predict today what a board should look like 20 years from now.
Can't argue with your outcome.
A couple questions. Dr. Robertson, first I want to thank you for the robe, and and I think it was under the limit. Although I was just a citizen enjoying your facility at that point in time, and I want to echo Senator Beyer. I think OHSU is the brightest, shiniest star in the state of Oregon, and now having partaken of your services and the expertise with which you deliver those services and the way you treat your patients, I mean, you're a model for everybody, I think, and so I truly appreciate that. But back to what Senator Beyer was talking about, it does say that seven of your board members have to have a level of expertise in OHSU. How is that defined?
Senator Cruz, it is very broadly defined, and I actually reread that last night, but I can't exactly recall it today. We do have that with us if you want, but it is very, very broad.
And Ms. Chair, and thank you for that, and it does need to be, but I think that's a point to be considered, is there has to be some connections.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Great point.
Okay.
Thank you. You look great in that hospital gown, but only from the front.
No, actually, I look better from the back. I always do. But. No, it was a robe. It wasn't a gown. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you, Dr. Robinson, for being here. I think you have, I'll let you find that first.
Okay. We can read that if you want.
Yeah, please.
Please, yeah.
Seven representatives who are in the discretion of the governor have experience in areas related to the university missions or that are important to the success of Oregon Health and Science University, including but not limited to higher education, healthcare, scientific research, engineering and technology, and economic and business development.
If I could, do you make recommendations? Does OHSU make recommendations to the governor?
Senator Cruz, we do make recommendations to the governor, yes, okay. And the governor is then free to consider or not.
Right. Okay. I think that's an important and appropriate as well.
Thanks for bringing up that language.
Thank you. And my thing has to do with a couple of points you made early. And the first one is we kind of took you out of OUS, but you've really stayed in. I mean, you have a very strong relationship in OUS, and I've talked to a lot of people about that. And I guess as we venture forward, I hope that your expertise can continue to guide some people in the kinds of questions they need to ask and the kinds of issues. And I know that that's been something that you guys have looked forward to do and have continued to do since this arrangement. And so when I looked at your first group, a list, the one thing was a clear mission. And we're in our bill, we're not looking at, you know, really setting each one of them free, basically. How important is it for us to be clear in exactly what the board's responsibilities can and cannot be? And then are there any particular things that you think we really need to let them have some free rein on as opposed to others? Because without it, they're not going to be able to do the things that you may think are important. I don't know if you can answer those. But.
Senator Rowland, I think the more clarity of mission that you can provide, I mean, I think that would be well advised. Some way, I don't know exactly how it happened. I mean, because it was, but there was enough in our legislation, and it has been reinforced. You know, I think what's happened is it wasn't just once. You know, we have stayed in very close contact, and it was clear that we were doing this to facilitate the mission, that the legislature felt was important and OHSU felt was important. So we have been partners in that process. And I think the fact that we come down here every year and talk to you and we try and stay in touch with you is a key element of that. We stay some way that was clearly communicated both in writing and in actions. And if you look at our strategic plan, a key element of, again, that strategic plan is not only about the state citizens, but in that plan we talk about partnership, and that partnership extends to the other institutions in OUS. We believe that not is only our charge, but especially today and going forward in what are times of scarce resources, we think that that partnership will allow us to leverage those state resources in a better way. So I'm sorry if I wasn't specific enough, but I think I do want to underscore the importance of giving the autonomy to react in a manner that is necessary in a constantly changing environment, but to stay connected enough that all of us together can better leverage our state resources.
Is there also sometimes a fear or concern that if things go the wrong way, that the legislature will reel you back in? And,
Mr. Chair, in the spirit of true transparency, I guess I could say there is some of that, but if you want my list of things that keep me up at night, there are many things ahead of that.
I appreciate that, but I've tried sometimes to convince my colleagues that if giving the Portland State its own board doesn't work out, and come back and change, and that's it's not that difficult.
And Mr. Chair, I would also say that this has we've talked a lot about going to the bond market and the financing and such. The fact that we are a public entity and very closely related to the state, part of the state, is a very important factor as we go to the bond market. We are considered partially as a health system, but also partially as a university. But also the factor is, as we go to the bond market, I think the assumption is that the state is, ultimately behind us. So that also has worked very much to, it's given us the best of both worlds.
A slightly off subject, but you're here. Are you okay with the current version of the hospital tax?
Senator Cruz.
Slightly off subject.
That is from left field, but let me be very clear. OHSU has been a strong proponent of the hospital tax, okay? And the reason is very simple, is it is another way to raise resources for our state. When you say the current version, I'm afraid I may not be current enough. So I feel very, very confident going on the record as supporting the hospital tax. I get increasingly nervous in speaking of getting too far into the details.
Mr. Chair, I like putting people on the spot, but we're getting nods from you, people that have probably spent more time on this. And I actually wanted a chance to put on the record that it is our intention that the committee that's going to work on the performance metrics, we have been very clear that OHSU definitely has to be a representative in that group. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you. Okay.
Anything else? He's here.
You can tell he has different committee responsibilities.
Well, we appreciate your service to OHSU and your candor in front of us today.
Absolutely. So
thank you. And thank you for continuing to advise some of us on how as this plays out.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, it's my privilege to do so, and please contact us and allow us to assist with you in any manner that we can.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson. Yeah. Well, in the interest of time, I'm going to close the public hearing on SB 270. and I am going to open up a public hearing on SB 498. Can you give us a summary, Councillor?
Thank you very much, Chairman Haas, members of the committee. Senate Bill 498 appropriates funds to the Department of Education for the purpose of funding grant allocations under the Career and Technical Education Revitalization Grant Program. That grant program stems from House Bill 3362 from 2011, and so this is the second iteration of that program.
Okay, we have...
That's a pretty slam dunk sponsor list.
Yeah. We have Diane Rosenbaum, Michael Dembro, and Brad Avakian. Oh, here we are. They are here. Welcome.
Hi. Me? Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Great to see you all. And I am Diane Rosenbaum, State Senator from District 21. And I'm very excited to appear today in support of Senate Bill 498. As you know, I'm sure this is an extension of a bill that we passed last session to set up a grant program to fund career and technical education pilot projects. And you'll be shortly hearing from some of the real people, both the students and the entities that have benefited from this program. So I just want to say a few words about how I think this really is the merger of two things we talk all the time about in this building, and that is jobs and education. This program is a chance to replicate some very, very successful educational experiences for our young people. And an example of that is a high school in Milwaukee in my district called Sabin-Schellenberg. If you ever have a chance to go there, and maybe some of you already have, it's a place where you can be a high school student and learn what it's like to be an auto mechanic, learn what it's like to be a TV broadcaster with a full set and experience that, learn what it's like to be a healthcare practitioner, learn what it's like to be a dress designer, and then be able to merge your real-world learning experiences, you know, your algebra classes with blueprints, and experience the world of work and get motivated and excited about working harder in school, staying in school, and eventually picking an occupation that you can go on to train for. So I really just commend this bill to you. I don't want to take up too much more time because I think the room is probably full of great people who can talk in a meaningful way about how they have benefited from this. We really want this bill to be able to move speedily from this committee, hopefully with a hearty do pass recommendation onto Ways and Means, where the money sits to fund it, because this is something, even in tight budget times, that I think the tons of bipartisan sponsors of the bill would say should really be a priority for us this session. And I'll turn it over to my colleagues here to tell you more about it.
Thank you. I'm Michael Dembro. I represent House District 45. That's Northeast Portland out to Park Rose. I'm chair of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development and a very strong proponent of career technical education in general, this bill in particular. In 2011, in the midst of very tough budgetary situations, we were able to put $2 million into to create and put $2 million into the revitalization, CTE revitalization grant program. That was a bill, House Bill 3362, which had 60 out of the 90 legislators signed on to it, something that felt like a record never to be exceeded. However, as a House member, I have to concede that this year's Senate version has beaten us by far. You have
four.
Right. Nearly every legislator has signed on to this. And I think it speaks to just a general understanding and appreciation of the importance of career technical education. And I think an awareness of just how much we have lost in terms of the history of this state of funding career technical education. One of the things you may not know, Senators, is that students who are part of career technical education programs of study in their high schools graduate at above 90% rate, close to 95%. These programs create success, and they do that just by the nature, the way that they're put together, the way that they focus on applied learning. Some students, that's how they do math. They do it in a tactile manner. We've come to a much better understanding of different learning styles. For some students, this works. Mm-hmm. The close proximity to a career path keeps a number of them in school and on track to success. We see that in the high schools. We actually see that in the community colleges as well, where students in community college program, career technical programs, almost every one of them graduates. They've finished their programs. And it is something that we really should be investing in. So this the bill that we passed in 2011 was the product of a recognition of that success, but also just the many years of advocacy on the part of people in the, particularly from the building trades, to be honest, you know, who have been pushing this for many years, wanting to get this restored to the high schools. And then I have to say the, you know, undying advocacy of the man who's sitting to my right, our Labor Commissioner, Brad Avakian, who has been just a real champion on this issue. What's key about these grants is they are partnerships. They are partnerships between the school districts and business and industry, community colleges, in recognition, A, that we're probably never going to be able to fund the districts enough that they can just do this all on their own. But also that a recognition that it makes sense to partner and to create pathways for students from school into the workforce. And that's what this revitalization grant program is intended to do. So I'm very proud to bring this before you. And remember, the $2 million that we authorized in 2011 was kind of a tryout, and it was also just for 1 year. What we're asking this legislature to do is fund this program the way it needs to be funded and for the entire biennium. So thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Representative Chair Avakian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. I'm Brad Avakian, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I want to thank you for the hearing today, and broader than just your committee, I want to thank the legislature for the tremendous job a year ago in getting these career education programs back. The grant fund last time, which is now depleted, brought fully restored programs to 21 middle schools and high schools around the state. And the discussion last time, which continues today, is that that was the first step in a 10-year plan in order to restore these programs to every middle school and high school. I think if we stay on the pace that we're on, you're going to have that. And would venture to tell you that at the end of that 10-year pathway, if we've done it right, Oregon will have created what is the best career education and workforce development system in the nation. Other states are already starting to see a glimpse of what we started last time and paying attention and asking questions about it. And I just want to thank the committee for staying on the path. And with that, unless you have questions, maybe we will leave it to the program participants and the Department of Ed that's sitting behind us.
Yeah, mostly just a comment. I want to say that as a high school principal, Boley was instrumental in a program between the state of Oregon and a state in Germany where we got to go look at their vocational schools. And I had the opportunity to go on that trip and work with a lot of people, and I was always intrigued that they thought we had an amazing program. And I say that because the school they took them to was, at that time, Owen Saban. And so they thought every school in Oregon had an Owen Saban. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of hard for them when they realized that we didn't have that in every school because their system was much more state-run and much larger in scope. But they acknowledged that they felt what was happening on Sabin was much better than a lot of things they were doing. And I, you know, that continues to be one of the amazing schools for vocational education in the state of Oregon, and actually in the country. My father was a vocational carpentry teacher. He came and visited Owen Sabin and other schools in Portland to try to make sure things were. Oregon has done a good job over a lot of years, and we had lost our way with regard to vocational education in most high schools. I appreciate Commissioner Avakian's dogged determination to make sure that we come back and revisit this, since he was a legislator all the way through to his current job. So I appreciate the bill, and I just want to say Owen Sabin has always been one of those places that is a unique place, and if you haven't seen it, it is truly worthwhile for any person to see what high school kids and students can do, and I hope there's some here. I don't know if we have any, but it's kind of amazing. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to add that in visiting schools in my district, what I've heard is that that technical education opportunity is key to keep many students engaged. And I think I would agree with Representative Dembro, and I want to put that on the record because it could be the last time this session we agree.
I'll cherish
no,
it.
No, I'm just Senator. Kidding. But I think you're right, and that's backed up by the people out in the field who are working and from the students themselves who, in some cases, have escorted me around their particular schools, and the input that they've given is that these are desperately needed in order to keep kids engaged and keep them interested, and ultimately, if we're going to reach 40-40-20 goal, we've got to do that.
Well said. Well, thank you. Representative Parker, and Representative Parker, did you wish to participate? Okay. And Representative Gilliam has left. So let's go to the Department of Education, Laura Roach. And that's your team. Okay. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Senator Haas and members of the committee. My name is Laura Roach. I work at the Department of Education, and I am the director of the secondary post-secondary transitions team, and it's my team that works with career and technical education. We just wanted to say a great thank you to those of you who made this bill happen last year and who are considering it this year. We believe that career and technical education is a very important part of a student's high school opportunities and learning, and I think you know that. You've been provided with some documents that summarize the activities that we were able to support last year. We made 8 major grants to a number of schools. I think one of the things that we want to point out and share with you is that the BOLI, Department of Community Colleges, our workforce partners, and the Department of Education worked very hard to help this come to fruition. But more importantly, our teachers and principals and administrators and students out in the field were the ones who really made it come to life. And so I'm not going to take a lot of your time today to talk about what happened unless you'd like to, because you actually have the teachers, administrators, and the students in the audience who are prepared to talk with you. So just on behalf of the Department of Education, we appreciate your support. We certainly hope we will have continued support. We know how invaluable this opportunity is for all students. And if there's a way that you can continue to help us fund it, we would appreciate that, not for ourselves, but for the students of Oregon. Are there any questions?
Yes, Ms. Roach, one question. Of the grantees, how were they chosen?
We convened an advisory committee that was made up just about half workforce partners and half educators. And they came together and reviewed the RFPs and scored them and made awards. And part of the conscientious decision was to be able to award funds across the state, not just the large areas or you know, we wanted to be inclusive of our rural communities as well.
Of the 8, so there were 8 grants, how many applications?
I think it was 43, I believe 49 on there. I think it's 43.
Senator Rubin?
Yeah. My question, we saw kind of the demise of the technical education because the federal government started backing off the help that they had given us for a long time. Are we seeing any federal funds coming back into this area that can help supplement, because it's just equipment alone. I mean, the Second World War was a boon to most of our schools, right, because we got a lot of equipment. But we finding the resources to do that in rural schools is really tough. And if it weren't for some of those funds that were there before, are we seeing any conversation about that?
We have had a decline in federal funding, unfortunately, over the past few years. We have been getting between 13 and 15 million a biennium for secondary, and the same amount for post-secondary, but it's declining. It's down in the 13s now. Just took another 5% reduction. So, but we are trying to leverage those resources and trying to share resources between different agencies and different partners. So, yes, I understand. I wish I could tell you that I was hearing they were going to fund it at a higher level. However, I can certainly say that your federal partners would like to hear from you.
Okay. We'll make sure. Thank
you. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, let's talk to some of these educators and hear from Ms. Lisa Butts, Jamie Netter, Greg Thompson.
Senator Haas, members of the committee, my name is Liza Butts, and I'm a teacher at Joseph Charter School in the northeast corner of the state over in Joseph. So it's a long journey to get here, but I thank you for having the opportunity to speak in front of you today. I'm in here in strong support of the House or the Senate Bill 498, which will refill the Career and Technical Education, or CTE, Revitalization Grant. According to the National Career and Technical Education Program, which is housed within the U.S. Department of Education, 97% of all high school students earn at least some credits in CTE programs, and 79% of sub-baccalaureate post-secondary credentials are in CTE programs. CTE students are more interested and motivated in their coursework because of its connection to the real world and have lower dropout rates than traditional students. As you can see, CTE programs are an integral part of our educational system, and they really prepare students for the career world. I've really been diving into that this last year because of the CTE revitalization grants. And not only that, research shows that students who are considered at risk, disadvantaged, or who have disabilities have greater success in CTE programs. So our programs could be the very reason why these students stay in school and become positive contributors to our society. And they also push our highest students to really perform and to really perform at the highest levels. So as a teacher, I certainly know the importance of great CTE programs, and I've personally witnessed the transformation that my students have made over this last year because of the CTE revitalization grant. I've seen my students go from meek high school students to really becoming confident and tenacious young adults. And I've also been able to form partnerships with my within my community, with businesses, community colleges, and it's become such a positive thing in our small community. So Oregon now has the chance to become a real champion and a trailblazer in the CTE realm. So I urge you that as you make your decision on this bill, that you consider education an investment and not an expense. The future of our great country and this wonderful state is really in the hands of our students, and we owe it to them to provide them a meaningful and premier education. And ensuring that we have these CTE programs will ensure just that. Thank you.
My name is Greg Thompson. I'm a teacher at Churchill High School in Eugene, Oregon. I'd like to talk about the student motivation and what causes students to be motivated. In my mind, seeing students come to school and the biggest thing that they want to get engaged, as you mentioned earlier. And what does that mean? How does that success measured? Well, attendance rates increase. If you get students in class, then they're going to be successful. That's the biggest indicator of success is attendance. And through that enrollment, opening students' eyes to post-high school education through the things that the CTE grant have provided, allows students means in which to be educated in how to be successful after high school. So if that's whether that's in a two-year college or in a four-year college, it gives them the ability to work with those colleges while they're attending high school so that the success can be modeled and thereby created, as you indicated. Students have the ability to have hands-on learning through CTE, and that is the biggest thing that through integration of core concepts, that's the biggest thing that keeps student engagement up. Applying real-world situations and giving students the ability to be successful in that is key. One of the things that I'm seeing students do is have the ability to step into entrepreneurships and have an understanding of what are some of those things that you need to be able to be successful in the world outside of high school. I think I'm going to pass it on.
Ready?
Thank you. Yeah.
Senator Haas and committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Jamie Netter. I currently work at the Canby High School College to Career Center. I am the coordinator for the SPIRE program. I do set up job shadows for the CTE program, and I also coordinate our current internship program, which I'm going to tell you a little bit about. And I know that they spoke earlier about SAPE and Schellenberg, which is a great high school, but I think you're going to find that ours is pretty spectacular too. So, so in order to understand, I think, a little bit why the CTE revitalization grant has been important to Canby High School, I need to give you a little bit of background. Canby High School currently has 7 pre-approved areas of program of study for CTE. These programs are the foundation of what keeps us a comprehensive high school in Oregon. Within this program, we've built a pretty amazing college and career readiness class called Future Focus. Every sophomore student is required to go through this class as part of their graduation requirements, and within that, they're required also to do a job shadow and a second CURLY, we call it, which is a career-related learning experience. They complete a 10-year plan, which is, I know it sounds vast, but it defines their goals, how to reach those career goals. And further, each student must also complete a minimum of 8 career interest inventories and personal assessments so that they can determine what their interest level is and where it lies. So we give them a lot of opportunities to do this. They can't do anything within the means of a job shadow until they've completed all of these tasks. So once they're completed, we have them apply for the job shadow that they're interested in. We do over 500 of those job shadows a year, so each sophomore student will go through that program. Shortly, you'll hear from one of our students, Morgan Welch, who is pretty spectacular herself. I ask that you please listen closely because her story is important, not just because it clearly defines the importance of this program, but it speaks volumes of the students like Morgan who are thriving because of this experience that we've been able to provide just because of this grant money. So last year, while in Future Focus, Morgan chose to do a career paper on a juvenile court judge. Her job shadow I set up was through Clackamas County Circuit Court with Judge Deanne Darling. A few days after the shadow was complete, I received a wonderful note from Judge Darling who said, you know, this is a really go-getter student. You need to take notice, and we have. She said she would be willing to support Morgan with any of her future endeavors, whatever those are, and they just really took to her. So fast forward to spring of 2012 and the CTE revitalization grant. Canby High School was fortunate enough to be one of the recipients of that grant. With the career readiness classes already built into our curriculum, we knew that the internship component was what we were lacking. And this was the natural progression towards the college and career readiness that we had not been able to provide up to this point because of funding. Because of our already community support that we have with doing 500 job shadows a year, they were natural to buy into this next piece of this puzzle for us. We knew we had the contacts. We just knew that I needed to get out there and sell the program to them. So because of the money that we were granted, my summer was freed up to go into the community and talk to partner businesses that could be potential partners within this internship program. So as you might guess, the first person that I wanted to get in contact with was Judge Darlene. And I contacted her and her staff, and I felt it was a perfect opportunity to let her know that this would be the next progression for us if they were interested in that. And as you know, there's probably some logistics involved with a student of, you know, the age of 16 being involved in a court system. But the staff was really supportive of it, and they did some research and found out that, yes, they could house an intern. And so with that being said, Morgan will tell you more about her experience, but she did start in October of this past year interning as a clerk at Clackamas County Circuit Court. It's important to note one other really important component, I think, within our program is that we've partnered with Clackamas Community College so that students that are in the internship program will receive a college credit for every 30 hours that they are within their internship. It's a great partnership that we have with them. So in turn, just to kind of let you know, prior to receiving the grant, we started about 2 years ago with this internship program. We had 15 potential sites and I believe 7 students placed. You have a paper, I think, before you that shows that we have now well over 80 potential sites that have committed to us or are committing to us in the future, and we've placed currently 62 students about in those programs. We also, I just wanted to show you a visual, This is about 46 to 50 new applicants that are interested in the internship program. So there is a need, and the need is here. So thank you for your time today. I appreciate you having us.
Thank you very much. Questions for our panel of educators? Well, we thank you for visiting us and having camped in the Willows a couple times. I know how far it is to jump. So thank you for making that long haul.
Great. Thanks.
Okay, students, we have, I'm just going to go through the list here. Morgan Welch, the aforementioned Morgan Welch, Joel Ramirez, and Christopher Warnock.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Christopher Warnock, and I'm with Joseph Charter School, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 498. I am in support of it because it has done so much for me. Being in a CTE program has helped me immensely. By being in one of these, I have been able to gain skills I can use in future jobs and also do some job shadowing, which has helped me a lot. Before I started taking these classes, I already pretty much knew in my mind what I wanted to do when I grew up, but I didn't know how to achieve that goal. By being in this CTE program, it has given me the tools that I can use to actually get to that goal and achieve it. Because I want to be a computer programmer, and I just didn't know what to do. Like, I could do all the regular high school computer classes and go to college, but how would that put me any farther ahead than anyone else that wants to do the same exact thing? But luckily, my wonderful teacher, Miss Liza Butts, she came up to me one day and she said, "I have a wonderful opportunity for you. There's a computer class that you can join that we partnered with Treasure Valley Community College, and you'll be able to get college credit, you'll be able to have a paid internship, and you get to do so many different things." And at first, I thought it was just going to be another boring computer class that I barely learned anything in. But after finishing the first assignment, I took apart an entire computer, I put pieces back in, we learned all the parts, we've done presentations. I actually am going to a hospital and doing my paid internship working with them. And after that first 2 weeks, I instantly knew that this was something that was helping me. because instead of just taking the boring class where they give you a little presentation, you actually go out there, use your own hands, you teach yourself at speeds that you can do it, and you learn so much more that way. And I would recommend doing this for any kid that already knows what they want to do, or to any kid that just, they don't even have a clue what they're doing, because it gives you ideas on what you can do. Even if it isn't related to what you think you want to be when you grow up, it can actually kind of change your mind and make you think about it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Chair Haas and members of the committee.
It's good.
My name is Joel Ramirez, and I am representing Churchill High School in Eugene, Oregon. I'm going to talk about the program that we have in school, which is we have a pre-engineering class, which I'm in. And this class gives me and many different students opportunities that we never thought we had, we never seen. So it's a really good class. In my pre-engineering class, we apply the work that is taught in other classes, and we put it to the projects that we're doing in our class. In our pre-engineering class, we apply all the other work that we're doing for other classes, like maybe math, geometry, and we apply it to the projects that we're doing in our pre-engineering class. And for me, my personal experience as I was growing up, I was always helping my dad working on cars, so I was a hands-on person. And for me to sit in a class like regular academics, it was really exhausting just reading off of a book. So with this class, I don't no longer have to just be sitting down listening to a teacher the whole class waiting, and you kind of get off topic. You don't understand as well, and we get to take charge of what we're doing in our classes. We're not waiting for someone to tell us what to do, or take your paper and pencil out and start doing this. We take charge of what we're doing, and therefore I get to practice what I know, and I share my experience and my knowledge with other students. And for some people, it makes it easier to learn when you're physically doing something, when you're, it makes you understand, and it makes you apply what you know from other classes, and it makes sense when you apply to what you're doing in front of you. We also learn how to work in teams, which I think is a really important issue, because, for example, say a design engineer decides to make a car, he needs to be able to work with a mechanical engineer and a computer engineer and to be able to succeed. And with this class, this is what they're teaching us, that you need to be able to work with someone, and you start seeing that if a person is not willing to cooperate with you, it's going to be hard to succeed. So what this class is doing, it is preparing us for real-life experiences. And for me, what I've seen, that most jobs out there include some kind of engineer. So we need this, and I see that it's really helping me understand, break down things, and understand for our future. And I think this is a really, really good program that we have in our school. So this class is preparing us for our future. That's all I have to say. Thank you for letting us
speak.
Fantastic. Chair, committee, for the record, my name is Morgan Welch, and I am a junior at Canby High School, as we began to hear about. I am participating and privileged to participate in a CTE program that is offered at my school, which is the internship program. For the last 6 months, I have been an intern clerk at the Clackamas County Circuit Courts, I began in the records department, somewhere small and simple, to learn the basic knowledge of the different case types and the case numbers and their pleadings and their process of going about their documents. And I'm currently working in the civil department with future plans to move up to the criminal department and into the courtroom, possibly with the referee judge, to learn and embrace his environment and the environment inside the courtroom. I am currently 17, not 16 anymore, and my goal is to, in the long run, aspire and become a juvenile court judge. I want to study juvenile law, as I am not 18 yet, but when I turn 18, my hope is to transfer my internship over to the juvenile center to work with the judge I did shadow, Judge Deanne Darling, and get experience there. Thus far, I have gained the knowledge of their data system and how they enter all these different cases and the different case types, as I said. One of the greatest things that I believe I've gotten so far out of this program is the basic knowledge and understanding of professionalism and the different interactions that I have in my school and my community and out in the workforce. It has helped me form who I am and who I'm going to be. The essential skills that I'm getting with the organization and learning about records and data entry has been able to help me in high school, will help me in college, and furthermore in my career later on. The networks, as Jamie was explaining to you about me doing my job shadow, which was kind of the sprout and root of this internship, is where I truly began to understand what our staff and teachers and parents tell us about how important networks are for you now and in the future. These judges that I work with and the different clerks and supervisors at the courthouse are there to answer any of my questions, are there to offer letters of recommendation and even mentorship to help me move on and plant my goals to my future. But overall, this experience has given me an opportunity that I would not have had before. I'm working and doing the same things that other clerks are doing that are paid with an education, and the other volunteers that I work with are in their fourth year of law school, and they're in college, and they have a higher education than I, but yet are willing to communicate with me and help me in my growth in learning that. A little background about me is that 5 years ago, if you asked me this is where I would be today, it would not even be considered. I grew up in a single-parent home. My mother was a drug user. I took care of my younger brother and my older brother, who was schizophrenic. School was never my first priority. I hated school. It was something that was embarrassing for me to go to because I didn't have the best of homes, I didn't have the best of clothes, and I wasn't on track and upkept with the basic education because I moved several schools every few months. I was going further and further away from my comfort zone, and I didn't have my friends there. And so when I moved back to Canby with the family that I'm with now, it was not, I wouldn't say a second try, it was my first try. Because that first go-around, I had to be mom and grow up and go through things that children should never have to go through. But this is just one example. There's hundreds of kids that have to do that. And my freshman year, I was behind. I didn't have my basic math up to date. I was put in special education classes for reading and mathematics, and I wasn't sure about whether I really did like the school thing still. I was encouraged and was told I had to go every day of the week, but I still wasn't sure about it. But I had the guidance of counselors and the help from the different departments in math and English that have tutors to help and support me through that. And going and taking the CTE class, which is required to graduate, the future focus class, I had been forced to focus about me. I had to create my resume and a cover letter. I had to undergo mock interviews and experience that, which was something that was new to me. All of this whole idea of focusing about me and what I want to do in the future. And I learned from that point that I had seen the backside of the law, and I wanted to be on the good side. And that had sparked my interest. And writing this career goal narrative, which was, without exaggeration, 9 pages before I could go on a job shadow, was exhausting because I, at that point, was like, yeah, it sounds like a good idea, but I have down to my heart that this is what I want to do, to help other kids who never had the opportunities like I did. And going on the job shadow and creating that network and being able to create this internship has opened doors for me and has laid out my pathway to where I'm going to go in the future. It has been there. All the adults who run this program are there to support and sponsor me and are really the true inspiration of my hope and restoration of confidence and motivation to pursue a career later in life, because today's youth are tomorrow's future, and I am truly trying to uplift that and be something of myself that I never saw before. Thank you.
Thank you, and your adaptation of professionalism is evident. You present really well.
Thank you.
Questions of our students? Senator Roblin?
All I would say is I am impressed with all three of you, and it's great to have the real experts come and tell us about CTE. So I appreciate that as a previous principal and teacher. It is always enjoyable to get the people who are going through the process. And one thing about students, you're always honest about whether the class is boring or not boring, and you're always honest about the kinds of things that make a difference in your perspective. And it is heartening to hear that. It's not always what we get from people. So I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming down. John Chandler.
What's he a student of?
He's been trying for a long time. Give him a break.
And Andrew Bear. Yeah, okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here somewhat on behalf of my association, is also pinch hitting for contractors who couldn't be here today to talk to you about their experience using some of the CT students around the state. As you heard earlier, this is the bill in front of you is the end of a long effort that Representative Dembro, Commissioner Vakian, and many of us have been working on for quite a while. Coming at it from the construction industry side of things, back when the industry was humming, and hopefully in the future when we're humming again, one of our biggest problems was the shortage of labor, shortage of trained people that were coming up through the trades that had not had the opportunity to be exposed to what we call euphemistically shop classes as they went through school, because we had eliminated most of those programs for a variety of reasons. That really causes a problem. We have a lot of my members are getting to the point where they're wanting to take the tool bags off and retire. There was nobody coming up. We look to our schools, and we have kids that are being pushed into college preparatory classes, not into fields such as carpentry, electrical, plumbing, whatnot, where you can make a very good living, have a very good life, create and become a very productive member of society, and not necessarily darken the door of a college. And we missed several generations of children by not having these classes available, so a lot of us worked on this, and trying to get this legislature to fund these programs back into the schools, leaving aside all the testing modalities and all that are out there and the educators have to put up with, but to recognize that for many students, as you've heard, they're going to learn differently, they're going to be exposed differently, and they're going to find opportunities differently than we had been able to give them before. A couple things I want to just point out to you, just by way of the background noise, is that this was a joint open shop, closed shop, labor management, however you want to phrase it, because we worked with the building trades unions, electrical unions, the IBEW, the sheet metal, and my membership, which is primarily non-union employers, AGC, open and closed, ABC, mostly open, because we have always had the understanding that when kids were exposed to these trades and got to work, then and only then should we argue about whether or not they were union or non-union. It didn't make any sense to argue about whether or not they were organized if they weren't working in the first place. So we have joined hands with the labor side to make sure that we get kids exposed, make sure they have the opportunities available to them, and then we can see if whether or not they want to sign up with the union or stay in an open shop. Doesn't matter at that point. The important thing is to get kids the exposure, the training, the skills, that they may choose to go to college, they may choose to go to work, but at the very least we owe them that opportunity to have that junction point in their lives. You heard from some students earlier in not necessarily the shop class into things. I commend them for their personal stories. I just want to tell you that the other side of this is the kids going through the more traditional vocational, technical, odd auto, metal, electrical, that sort of thing. We believe there's a lot of good programs out there that this grant helped fund. I know for a fact there's many more programs that the added additional money we're asking for this session could go towards to good end. We recommend the bill to you. We hope you'll vote not only to move it to Ways and Means expeditiously, but voting for the funding when it comes back out the other side. I'm glad to take any questions at the end. Thank you.
Chairman Haas, committee members. I'm Andrew Beyer, no relation to Senator Beyer, at least that he's willing to admit to. I'm a resident of Portland, project executive of Lees Crutcher Lewis, which is a large general contractor in Seattle and in Portland. We do about $300 to $500 million of business annually, about $150 million of that business in the state of Oregon. I'm also here representing the AGC. I am a past president, member of the legislative committee on the PAC board, and the current president of the AGC Foundation. I was also a member of the CTE advisory group and the grant review committee that reviewed all of the grants that were discussed earlier today, and had an opportunity to understand some of the CTE programs from around the state. I'll spend a little bit of time on my own background because it's a little bit unusual. I'm the product of a great public school education that included many shop classes. Unlike some of my peers, I took advanced placement classes, had a 3.95 grade point average, and took shop classes every year from junior high school through high school. I still benefit from the lessons that I learned in those shop classes. I have a BS in art and art education from Southern Oregon University, an MBA from the University of Oregon, and I was an educator for 20 years before entering the construction profession. I initially taught in Central Point when it was a small mill town, and then spent 15 years at the Catlin Gable School as a woodshop and art teacher, associate head, and acting head of school. I'm now a man of business, and I strongly support full funding for this legislation. I have three simple messages. The first message is this: over 90% of CTE students graduate. More of these students need your help to stay in school and to succeed. The student need and the demand is substantial. As a state, we are failing roughly 40% of our high school students who drop out. It's my opinion that at least 20% of that number is entirely our fault for gutting the funding of public education. Education is about more than the three R's. Many students need different ways to learn and achieve, and CTE, as you've heard, is highly effective, and it is a core program of any good educational program. Governor Kitzhaber is absolutely correct that we can do better, and we must do better. You've heard what a difference exposure to CTE provides for the retention, exploration of career options, and overall sense of purpose in our high school students. For me, this is heartfelt. I have personally experienced it, I have taught it, and seen what a difference CTE makes, and I have helped fund it. Message number two, this is critically important to our businesses, critically important. We can't do it alone, but we can do it together. The proposals that I read on the CT Advisory Committee all included components of partnership between the schools and businesses and potentially community colleges. You are not alone in supporting these funding programs, though I appreciate the funding that you have given them. Architecture, engineering, and construction firms have provided substantial financial and mentoring support to CTE across the state. Over the last 5 years, the AGC alone has provided $1.2 million to high school and apprenticeship training programs like the ACE Academy, Portland Youth Builders, and Northwest Construction College, and over $560,000 to community colleges and universities. And that was during the worst construction downturn since the 1980s when I was an apprentice carpenter. With the CTE Advisory Group, I read proposals from extraordinary CTE programs across the state, programs that have great ideas about how to improve student results, and you heard the students talk about what integrated education, what experiential education does to their motivation. This isn't just about Portland. It's about Bend, it's about Beaverton, it's about Coos Bay, it's about Roseburg, Springfield, Medford, Klamath Falls, and every community in our state.
Joseph,
thank you. Lewis employs people who grew up in cities from Ontario to Tillamook and Klamath Falls to Astoria. 89, I understand, of the 90 Oregon legislators are now co-sponsoring this bill. What an extraordinary opportunity to bring the state together for common purpose. Every one of the funded CTE revitalization improvements have made a positive difference in the lives of Oregon students and reduced the Oregon dropout rate. The initial $2 million grant funded CTE programs across the state, but we also turned down requests from every region. The advisory group's greatest regret was that we couldn't fund more of the proposals. $2 million was a good start, but truly just a beginning. Every high school graduate, every CTE graduate has future opportunities, opportunities to be productive citizens, to work in great industries and businesses that need their help. I need capable people at Lee's Crutcher Lewis today who know how to work, who want to work, and who want to contribute to a successful business. I need them today. I am hiring them today. Message number three. AGC and businesses will continue to fund CTE programs, and I strongly support this bill fully funded. I will happily pay taxes to fund CTE. I urge you to support it too, fully funded. I hope you will seize the opportunity to unite us as a state. Thank you. Any questions?
Senator Cruz.
Just a small correction. Only 86 of the 90 signed the bill.
I stand corrected. Thank you, Senator Cruz.
I've identified the four who didn't. So.
Byer, any questions for your long-lost relatives? Well, we thank you both. We'll do our best
for
funding.
You.
And
thank
we
you.
Appreciate the support for too. And
absolutely. It's a partnership.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, signed up. We have Benjamin Barber still here. Welcome.
Thank you, committee. I was lucky enough when I was young and 16 to have the opportunity to go to Clackamas Community College and go through an internship program at Portland State University.
Benjamin, can you start off with your ID?
Oh. Sorry, with my ID?
Name.
Oh, my name is Benjamin Barber.
For the record.
I was lucky enough to have been able to go to Clackamas Community College at the age of 16 and was able to go to computer systems administration internship at Portland State University, where I was taught the entire trade of computer systems administration and had access to robotics professors who taught me the importance of information. And it endowed on me the importance of information and empowering young people. Currently, I am a volunteer teacher over at Metropolitan Learning Center. My wife is a special educator over there as well. I teach computer science, electrical engineering, and biological sciences. Not paid, just because it's important to me. One of the things that I'm applying to do is to teach over at OMSI. They have this thing called a Maker Center. And I believe that is important for teaching kids the hands-on skills that are necessary to be able to enter the job force. I believe that Maker Centers can be paired in high schools along with science classrooms to teach them the how to actually demonstrate working knowledge of applied sciences. For example, there are kids in San Francisco who are making genetically engineered yogurt that glows in the dark in San Francisco. These are jobs that produce $130,000 a year. Amongst three of my friends that did this program, one of them is now a genetic engineer. And this was a large, this is important to me because when I was younger, I did not go to school until I was 11 years old and did not think I had any chance in my life. And thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Benjamin, hold on. I have you signed up for 272. Did you just get on both forms?
Okay.
Did you want to testify on?
Well, yeah, this was for the one, and the other one I was told at the end because there's time constraints.
Yeah.
So do you want me to speak on behalf of both of them or just this one right now?
Well, you're the last person. If there's no one else to come before us on Senate Bill 498, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 498. And did you want to speak on Senate Bill 270?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 270 for purposes of Benjamin, and then we are going to go back into work session on 498. So go ahead, Benjamin.
So I have some experience in terms of independent boards and also with the administration of Portland State University. I worked there as a computer systems administrator for many years. And my wife went to school at Bowling Green State University. There at Bowling Green State, they had a system of a state higher board of education, as well as institutional level board as well. During the time that there was a CEO, Carol Cartwright, the state had given them money for STEM as well as education retraining. What she ended up doing with the money was to basically build a stadium. She was also on the chair of the NCAA and NPR and a nuclear power company. She also built dorms and cafeteria halls and made them mandatory to use, despite the fact that they were more expensive than mortgages in this small rural town, and they were more expensive than restaurants. And then after everything was built, she quit and paid herself $1 million and continues to pay herself in perpetuity and contract out the maintenance and operation of these centers for American campus communities. My experience over at Portland State University was somewhat similar. I was living on Southwest 5th and College, and ODOT came to do a eminent domain acquisition of that property. There was a adjacent law firm that was fighting it legally, but they were not trying to pay market rates. And so I was left with basically no trash and with constant jackhammers outside my bedroom. I ended up getting ulcers and having medical problems. In addition to the fact that because I was on an independency override, I have illiterate parents who can't pay taxes, could not help me. I was going to school underneath this, and the administration lost my financial aid paperwork, and I was ineligible to be able to go to school, ineligible to retain my job, and in essence, I ended up becoming homeless and having to no longer be able to go to school any longer, can't pay off my debt, and et cetera. The issue with having these independent boards is a lack of oversight and the fact that they are going to try to externalize their costs and internalize their gains. And that's when that happens frequently. Even if you do try to have independent boards, there can be members of boards who are CEOs of their companies who intermingle with each other in such a way that they contribute to one another's well-being in a way that maybe isn't illegal, but it is unethical. And if anything, I don't see how structurally there is any advantage to doing this. I mean, I understand that OHSU had their system, but they're providing a consumer good, and they were needing more money to provide consumer goods and services. I see this as being a privatizing of education and reducing competition. It will drive up costs and cause issues for more Oregonians. Thank you.
Questions for Benjamin? We thank you for those words. Warning, we're trying to build in as much oversight as we can, so thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 270. And open up a work session on Senate Bill 498 as a subsequent referral, as you probably all know, to Ways and Means. Senator Canope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 498 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Canope moves that Senate Bill 498 be reported out of the committee with a hearty due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion?
Is Hardy defined in statute?
It's not defined. It's one of our presenters, I think, Senator Rosenbaum.
Well, I think we can achieve full funding. I believe Mr. Beyer, who testified, said he wanted to pay for this thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's here anymore, but maybe he can go down to Ways and Means with this bill and the check.
Yes, because right. This bill
full funding. Full funding. No, I don't know if he committed to that exactly, but I think this is well worthwhile, as I mentioned, and glad to see it moving along.
Further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries and it goes down to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, committee. We did have 540 on the agenda. There is no one here signed up for it. There is no need to do a public hearing, so we will let that go. And if there's no other business before us, we will adjourn.